This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Marked by J.A. Cipriano, narrated by James Patrick Cronin. Chapter 1. As I stood there staring at my wall, trying to process how the hell I was going to finish a job I couldn't remember by the end of the day so some kidnappers would release the woman and her son, someone slipped a Garrett over my head. My left hand shot up, barely getting between the piano wire and my throat. As it pulled tight, the loop bit into my flesh, slicing open my palm while my attacker tried to pull me backward off my feet. Instead of trying to retain my balance while simultaneously keeping the Garrett from slicing into my carotid artery, I opted to throw us both backward with everything I had. My assailant stumbled, as the combination of weight and momentum sent us crashing into the drywall hard enough for my brain to rattle in my head. But thankfully, the wire loosened just enough for me to catch a shallow breath that burned like cheap whiskey and cigar smoke. Blood pounded in my temples as I drove the back of my skull into my attacker and was rewarded with a satisfying crunch. The loop loosened further, but not enough for me to escape. Pain and blood spilled from my left hand as my assailant regained his hold from beneath me. I brought my right hand up and fired my gun awkwardly behind me. The sound was deafening in the tiny room. A cry I could barely hear over the ringing in my ears erupted from behind me as the wire fell away. I spun, jerking the Garrett free while pointing my Desert Eagle at my attacker. He was bone white, and as far as I could tell, had shaved all the hair off his body, probably so he wouldn't leave evidence behind. Well, judging by the scarlet spray on the wall behind him, there was little chance of that happening. This guy was no doubt some kind of professional hitman, and I didn't think that just because he was bald and wearing a tailored Italian suit with a red tie. No, it was because his eyes held the flat, dead stare of a crocodile. Those were eyes that had watched a million men die, and if given the opportunity, would watch a million more. Crimson slowly spread out from the bullet holes in his chest, staining his crisp white shirt scarlet. As I leaned in close to him, my pistol pointed at him, his blood-splattered lips opened and closed slowly, reminding me of a fish's futile gasps for air on dry land. "Who sent you?" I growled, shoving the gun up under his chin, even though it was sort of pointless, because even if he was on a surgeon's table right now, he wouldn't be living for more than a few minutes. Still, I was betting he didn't know that, and if he did, maybe he'd do me a solid. The day was young, after all, so anything was possible. The man smiled at me, revealing a mouthful of scarlet teeth.
"Pierce Ambrose sends his regards."
His grin grew wider as his white-gloved right hand fell to the floor. A grenade spilled from his grip, rolling across the tile toward me. As my eyes widened in shock, my heart went absolutely schizophrenic in my chest. Was he seriously going to detonate a grenade to take me along with him? The sound of his choking laughter seemed to fill every inch of the room as I spun on my heel and sprinted toward the big window along the far wall. I fired at the window, reducing the glass to shards as I dove through it, tucking myself into a ball. A blast of heat and sound erupted from the room as I cleared the frame. The force of the explosion caught me in mid-leap and flung me through the air like a rag doll. My back slammed into the concrete deck, and agony shot through every last vertebrae in my body as I tumbled haphazardly into the pool. The sudden cold shocked me back to my senses, and I nearly sucked in a lungful of water. I managed to clamp my lips back together as flame washed over the top of the pool. My feet touched the cement bottom a second later, and as debris began to rain down through the water overhead, I marveled at how I was still alive. Chunks of me should be splattered across the backyard, but somehow I'd survived. Someone up there must like me, or, more likely, someone down below. Lungs burning, I pushed myself off the cement, propelling myself toward the surface. The water around me erupted with gunfire. Bullets sliced through the space all around me, leaving trails of bubbles in their wake. The only thing that saved me from becoming a holy corpse was the depth, which robbed their ammunition of the force to puncture my thick trench coat. I pulled up short of the surface, halting myself as the blurry faces of over half a dozen bald men in suits appeared overhead. I cried out in shock, but the only thing that really came out of my mouth was a huge bubble. My lungs screamed for air as I tried to figure out what to do. If I didn't do something quick, I was going to black out. If that happened, well, I didn't want to think about what that would do for my chances of survival. Already, my vision was starting to go dark around the edges. As I searched my mind frantically for some kind of plan, the demonic cat, who had cursed me, looked up at me from the shadows of my brain, causing me to remember a critical piece of information. I had devil magic. I glanced from the men still filling the pool with hot lead to my black-as-night right arm, before settling my gaze back on the shooters. They were about to learn a valuable lesson on confronting Mac Brennan.
"Ignis!"
I yelled with all my might, and even though it was more a soundless stream of bubbles in the water, the scarlet tattoos emblazoned on my right arm flared like the sun. As the water around my hand turned to steam, the pool exploded in a burst of scarlet light. Crimson hellfire sprang to life in my right palm. A grin spread across my lips as I flung it at the closest of my attackers. The fireball hit the man in the chest, burning through him in the space of a heartbeat and leaving a plainly visible hole in his torso. He slumped forward onto his knees, face distorted in a strange mixture of pain and shock. He toppled forward into the water as his companions scattered, taking cover from the weirdo in the pool with the flaming hand. Which was me, so it worked out. I burst upward through the pool's surface just as my lungs were about to explode. Water cascaded down around me as I conjured more hellfire and brandished it like a weapon. Their faces were awash with confusion and fear, cementing one tiny factoid in my brain. These guys hadn't known I was accursed, and had sold my soul to a demon in exchange for magic. After all, who in their right mind would attack a guy with a flaming hand with a piece of piano wire? Besides, I'd had my powers all of a day. There was no way they'd have known, especially since this was my first trip to this house since I'd lost all my memories. Still, a bullet to the brain would probably kill me just the same, and I wasn't quite ready to meet death upon his pale horse. So what did I do? I threw myself out of the pool and ran like the dickens, while flinging fire around the backyard like it was going out of style. Some for you, and you, and oh, I didn't forget you, you little scamp. I reached the black wrought iron gate set into on the cinder block wall a second later, and instead of trying to fiddle with the lock, I did the only sensible thing I could. I punched the hell out of the gate with my blacker than the hair on Satan's ass fist of fury. The fancy wrought iron crumpled inward with a shriek that was like nails on the chalkboard of my brain before it tore free of the cinder block in a spray of stone and debris. It struck the well-manicured lawn and gouged a swath into the sod that made me hope this wasn't actually my home. If it was, the repair bills were going to be nuts. Then again, I was pretty sure I'd have to be alive for it to matter. Something told me there were no lawns in hell. Bullets ricocheted off the stone next to me as I dove sideways through the blown-out gate. I landed hard on the dirt beneath a 20-foot-tall cherry tree. The air burst from my lungs as my entire right side went a bit numb. Even still, I scrambled to my feet and took off running, a fresh surge of adrenaline rushing through me. My chest heaved with effort as I rounded the corner at the end of the block, afraid to look back and see how many of them were chasing me. Hopefully it wasn't all of them. It only took me less than a minute to make my way out of the neighborhood and onto the main street, which was good, because across the street, I could just make out what looked like a swap meet filled with people. I could definitely hide there, assuming, of course, I didn't get shot in the back or hit by a car. I took a deep breath before sprinting for the entrance. My wet feet slapped onto the concrete a moment later. It was a good thing, too, because that was when the guys who had redecorated my house in postmodern war zone burst from the neighborhood. Evidently, they weren't deterred by hellfire. Good to know. I ducked in front of a large black man in a clown costume who was messing with a bunch of red balloons and hoped I wasn't making him into a human shield. When he wasn't immediately perforated, I breathed in a sigh of relief and ducked into the nearest booth to catch my breath.
"Can I help you?"
asked an old Asian man with spectacles as he looked at me from across a wide variety of cabbages and other assorted vegetables way too ethnic for me to identify.
"Yeah, just let me catch my breath," I said in between gulps of sweet, sweet air while I leaned on the corner of a table for support.
I couldn't stay here long. If I did, this place would turn into a bloodbath. Unfortunately, my body felt like it had been pushed to its limit. Evidently, throwing around hellfire willy-nilly while sprinting away from bad guys was physically taxing. Who knew?
"You should hide in Harper's, over at the other end," the old man said, giving me one last dismissive glance before going back to his magazine. "If you aren't going to buy anything, please leave. You're dripping all over my floor, and the absolute last thing I need is for some jackass to slip and sue me."
I was about to make a snarky reply when gunfire burst through the side of the stand, cleaving a swath of lead death through the cabbages in front of me. Chapter 2. I dove out of the way, grabbing the old man and tucking him against my body as we rolled clear of the gunfire just in time for a black Chevy Tahoe with tinted windows to turn the vegetable stand into an impromptu salad bar. The structure collapsed around us, but that didn't stop the bullets from the attacker's MP5s from chewing up the surrounding asphalt. Hoping to spare him some time in an emergency room or a morgue, I scrambled off the old man and sprang to my feet with nearly cat-like grace. I say nearly because I wound up stumbling over a curb and face-planting onto the sidewalk behind a telephone pole. More bullets hit the wood, tearing off chunks of debris as I crawled away on my hands and knees, trying to keep as low as possible. They no longer seemed to be firing in the old guy's general direction, but I wasn't sure that was a good thing, because now they were shooting in my general direction. I was pretty sure the only thing that kept me from getting shot full of holes was the thick tarp obscuring their vision. Unfortunately, with the amount of bullets coming my way, I'd run out of luck soon enough. It wouldn't be long before they got free of the collapsed vegetable stand, and I wanted to be long gone by the time that happened. Besides, for all I knew, there were more of them in another vehicle. I had half a mind to hurl some hellfire at the Tahoe to create a distraction while simultaneously burning my assailants to cinders. But that might have horrible consequences, given the non-insignificant amount of people in the near vicinity. Granted, most of them were running for cover or cowering in fear, but I was pretty sure blowing up a car with demon magic was not going to turn out well for the average Joe in the wrong place at the wrong time.
"Why can't I be more of a plain-dealing villain?" I growled to myself, casting one last glance at the tarped men before bolting for the exit. Then I'd just kill everyone and walk away into the sunset.
My still-wet socks squished inside my cheap loafers as I ran out of the swap meet, slipping past the gate and into the open. One quick glance down the street revealed no vehicles trying to run me down, which was good. That would get old fast. I spun on my heel, meaning to make my way to the corner and disappear into the adjacent neighborhood where I could hopefully borrow a car and begin to unravel a question I hadn't properly given enough thought. Who was Pierce Ambrose, and why did he want me dead? I guess that was really two questions. The clown from earlier clotheslined me. His huge black arm snaked out so fast I didn't even see it coming. My chest slammed into his arm broadside, and my feet went out from under me as I toppled onto my back. My head smacked into the concrete with a wet thwack. My chest felt like it had hit a steel girder, and my vision was filled with little black spots. I tried to move, but before I could, the clown pinned my right arm beneath one size 20 red shoe and peered down at me. His painted-on red lips distorted into an eerie smile. Time seemed to slow down around us, and I swore I could see each fleck of dust in the air coming to a stop.
"Well, look what the cat dragged in,"
the clown mused, his dark eyes sparkling with delight.
"You're not really very good at the low-profile thing, are you, Mac?"
"That means a lot coming from a 7-foot-tall black man in a bright yellow clown suit. Did you get it on sale, or were you just really fond of the squirty flower? It really brings out your eyes," I said while trying to wrench my arm free. I wound up doing little more than grinding my skin against the cement. I ceased before I got a horrible case of road rash and fixed him with my best eye-kick puppy's glare.
"Now tell me one thing. How the hell do you know my name?" "I'm here to see how you're progressing on your hunt for Mr. Ambrose, but I'm guessing you haven't succeeded or those asshats wouldn't be after you," he said,
and while he hadn't answered my question directly, he had given me a pretty good hint. He knew who I was, because he was with the people who had abducted the woman and her son. Well, if that was the case, he was in for a world of hurt, Mac Brennan style. He gestured at the Tahoe, barely visible through the slats in the chain-link fence surrounding the swap meet.
"Call me when you get it done, and we'll arrange for you to pick up your sister and her brat while they are still in one piece. Or don't, and we'll see just how small a box I can fit them in. See, I just got a new wood chipper, and I've been just dying to test it out."
I couldn't move, couldn't even breathe. The woman and her son were my sister and nephew? Was that why I'd gone and gotten myself cursed? To save them? It was the only thing that made sense. I must have done it to save them from this guy and his thugs because I was responsible for their kidnapping. With that horrific thought freshly plastered across my brain, he lifted his foot, releasing me. For a moment, I was tempted to try to take him down, and not just because he'd just threatened to put my sister and nephew into a wood chipper, although that alone was enough to make me wish I had a bullet to put in his brain. If he was telling the truth about why he was here, it meant Ambrose was the target I'd failed to kill. That was probably why his goons were after me. I'd obviously attacked the man, failed, and tried to weasel out of the deal. Instead of letting me run off with my tail tucked firmly between my legs, my employer had sent his own goons to ensure I finished the job while Ambrose had decided to stamp me out before I could take another crack at him. Well, this just reeked of awesome. I wasn't sure who Pierce Ambrose was, nor why I'd been sent to kill him, but the realization made my blood run cold. Had I been some kind of assassin before I'd lost my memories? It would certainly explain some things, like why I knew everything there was to know about firearms, and why I could look at a building and think of 50 ways to get inside without breaking a sweat. Those were not typical skills, or at least, I didn't think they were. If I had been an assassin, I had killed people for money. How could that have been who I was? The thought of doing such a thing turned my stomach. I may not have been willing to say I was a hero, but I definitely wasn't someone who could indiscriminately sell my skills to the highest bidder. At least, not this version of me. Still, the idea of getting my family returned to me unscathed was nearly all-encompassing, and if all I needed to do was kill Pierce Ambrose, the guy was as good as dead, assuming, of course, he was a guy. Maybe he was a girl. For all I knew, I was an equal opportunity hitman. Then again, what was the saying about the shortest distance between two points being a straight line? I didn't need to kill Ambrose if I could get this clown to tell me precisely where they had my sister. I could just break in, go all crazy demonic arm on her captors, and walk out with Michael Bay explosions in the background. That sounded like a plan to me. Before I could even get to my feet, something dark and monstrous swam through the clown's eyes. Fear filled my gut, making me suck in a breath so hard it physically hurt. Could he read my thoughts? No, seeing my thoughts was impossible. Surely I was just imagining things. Right? As that question flitted through my brain, the clown chuckled at me, opening his mouth to reveal so many teeth it was almost like there was no end to them. There were hundreds, no, thousands of teeth in that mouth. Teeth that stretched all the way down to hell and back again.
I'm starting to think you might be as smart as my boy said you were, Mac. Admittedly, I was a little skittish about hiring a normal guy to try to take one of my rival's best pieces off the board, but he insisted you could do it. Of course, he was wrong, but then again, he gestured at my arm. It looks like you went and got yourself an upgrade.
He flashed me a cruel smile.
Hope it was worth whatever you traded. I might have offered you a deal myself, but I don't particularly like coming to Earth. I can't stand the smells, or the clothing. But after what you did to Visago's guy, I just had to come and see you for myself, especially since you and I happen to be in business together.
He clapped his ham-sized hands together with a loud thwack.
Never did care for Visago. He's kind of a weird cat.
Glad I could help you out, I mumbled, trying to figure out why this clown seemed so pleased about me offing Visago's right-hand man. Sure, Visago might have been the demon prince of 24 realms of hell, but I was under no illusions about my ability to take on the demon mano a mano. If Visago wanted me dead, I'd be a smudge on the ground. I was just hoping the demon didn't actually care enough to make that happen, even though I'd spent all of yesterday thwarting his evil plans to kidnap a woman and her son.
I appreciate your moxie, but that doesn't change things between us, Mac, the clown replied, before spouting off a phone number that burned itself into my brain like a red-hot poker.
I cried out, clutching my forehead as actual smoke curled from between my fingers. As the pain subsided, leaving behind one hell of a headache, I glared at the man through my splayed fingers.
You could have just wrote it down, I growled, as tiny invisible elves took turns smashing numbers into my brain. I did write it down. I just did it on your brain so you wouldn't have some excuse later like you forgot it, he replied, before flipping me the bird and straight up vanishing from sight.
The only trace he'd ever been there was a pair of molten footprints in the cement. I swallowed hard. Had he been a demon like Visago? Or another cursed? I'd seen both of them pull off a similar trick. Something about him made me think he might actually be a demon, and that wasn't just because I sort of remembered a cursed kicking my teeth in when my sister had been kidnapped. It was more because the guy had given me the creeps, in that same icy water down the neck way Visago had. Well, this was just great. Apparently, I had caught the attention of another demon. Today was fixing to go swimmingly. I had half a second to let that thought roll around in my head as I climbed to my feet. The moment I was standing, time seemed to explode forward all around me. The Chevy Tahoe broke free of the tent in a squeal of burning rubber as the assailants let loose a flurry of bullets in my general direction. Chapter 3. My arm went up instinctively to shield my body as the word Tueri burst from my lips. Red light spilled down around my body, forming a translucent shield over my delicate flesh just before a horde of angry bullets slammed into me. Thankfully, the bullets broke apart with little flares of starfire instead of reducing me to Swiss cheese. A guttural cry of anguish exploded from my throat. Each and every one felt like I'd been hit by a Roger Clemens fastball. As I stepped off the curb, a spray of bullets caught me in the back of the left knee. My leg shot out from under me. My arms windmilled as I tried to regain my balance. Unfortunately, my right heel took this wonderful opportunity to slip off the sidewalk. I fell backward onto the cement, and my skull rebounded off the sidewalk like a basketball. Everything went dark and spotty around the edges. Well, screw this. Getting shot was no fun, even with a magical shield. As bullets ricocheted off the cement around me, I rolled off the sidewalk and into the street. Already I could see several men running toward me, firing their MP5s in quick bursts as they went. Definitely professionals. It made me wonder why they'd driven into the swap meet instead of perforating me from outside. It didn't make sense, unless they were trying to drive me back outside before unleashing their weapons. Before I could answer that question, my spider sense went absolutely berserk. I tore my gaze from the machine gun-toting assassins and found myself staring into the grill of a black Humvee as it barreled toward me, going well past the speed limit. It was so close, I could see the bald driver smiling at me over the wheel as a little hula dancer bobbed and weaved on the dashboard. They'd tricked me, chasing me into the path of the vehicle. Dicks? I cried out in rage and frustration as I threw my arm out in a pathetic attempt to block the oncoming Humvee. The vehicle slammed into me an eye blink later and crumpled around my outstretched arm in slow motion like I was Superman. Time seemed to slow down as my feet skidded backward across the asphalt. Then everything went sideways. The light clinging to me flickered and went out, and I was flung backward under the force of the impact. I landed some 30 feet away, flat on my back. The horrible smell of gasoline and smoke filled my nose as the glow surrounding me faded completely. That wasn't good. No one was shooting at me, which was awesome, because I was suddenly so tired I could barely keep my eyes open. The taste of blood filled my mouth as I tried to get to my feet, but it felt like my legs were made from jello. The ground swam underneath me as I stumbled away from the ruined vehicle. Some of my attackers had broken off, rushing toward the vehicle, probably to try to pull their compatriot out before it exploded. How nice for him, because plumes of dark smoke were already rising off of it, and where there's smoke, there's fire. The others, unfortunately, were still coming toward me, albeit cautiously. Whatever, as long as they weren't shooting, I was good. I whirled to face them, wobbling like a punch-drunk boxer. I was pretty sure I didn't have enough hellfire left in me to light a cigarette, but with any luck, they didn't know that. I took a menacing step toward them that was really more of a drunken sway and held my right hand out to them, palm up. Then I slowly curled my fingers toward me like a badass. "Come get some," I tried to say, but wound up coughing so violently I was pretty sure my words were lost as blood sprayed from my lips. They lined up their weapons on me. Damn. "Don't try anything stupid, Mac," said a familiar-sounding voice I couldn't quite place. It came from the closest of the black-suited nutjobs. This one was a little different, in that he was wearing expensive tactical gear over his suit and tie. He gestured at me with his MP5. "I'm not sure what's going on with you, but out of professional courtesy, I promise not to let them pump you full of lead if you come quietly." I was about to flip him the bird when a burgundy Corvette flew past the demolished Humvee like a bat out of hell and skidded to a stop between me and the guys with the guns. The passenger door flew open, and Ricky sat there behind the wheel, wearing wraparound shades and a predatory smile. She leaned toward me and held her hand out to me. "Come with me if you want to live," she said in her best Arnold impersonation. It was surprisingly good, and I would have laughed if I had non-bruised ribs. Instead, I shot her a good-natured wince. Ricky was the werewolf alpha I'd encountered while trying to secure Sarah and her son from Visago, and even though she'd had me dead to rights, she'd let me go. I already felt like I owed her one, so even though I was happy to see her, I was sort of annoyed it involved her saving me yet again. "Ricky?" I asked, flummoxed. Evidently, I wasn't the only one confused by her sudden appearance, because no one had shot at us yet. "What are you doing here?" "Saving you, obviously." She raised one perfect eyebrow into the air and grinned so her braces caught the light and glinted, which was also when the Humvee exploded into a fireball of death and debris. The shockwave sent me sprawling toward the Corvette. Her hand shot out of the opening Viper, quick, and seized me by the collar of my trench coat. Thanks to her werewolf strength, she hauled me inside like I weighed about as much as a swimsuit model after Purge Week, while simultaneously flooring the Corvette. My feet were taken out from under me as the street roared by, but before I could let out so much as a single girly scream, she deposited me lightly in the seat next to her. She made a sharp turn as gunfire erupted from behind us, and the passenger door next to me swung closed. I ducked instinctively as bullets pinged off our vehicle, which was when I realized they were bouncing off the windows instead of going through them. Ricky caught my expression, and it must have been strange, because she shrugged. "Yeah, it's bulletproof," Just because I can heal from gunshot wounds doesn't mean I like getting shot full of holes. She glanced back at the road, and her hands were a literal blur of motion as she worked the clutch and the wheel with her superhuman reflexes. It made me wonder how many of her kind were professional race car drivers. Probably all the good ones. Well, that wasn't fair at all. "Good to know," I said, trying to catch my breath while adrenaline surged through my veins. "But why did you come to save me?"
"Remember when I was slicing you open and you told me a story?"
She didn't look at me, but I saw her tongue snake out and rake over her lips, and I had to try very hard to ignore the fight-or-flight response that exploded through every inch of my being.
"You said you were helping Sarah because she happened to be there when you got all high and mighty."
"Yeah," I said, resting my head against the headrest and staring at the ceiling so I wouldn't freak out. My hands started to shake anyway. I'd been about to be killed by a bunch of gun-toting maniacs and had survived only because I was demon-enhanced. What would have happened to me if I'd never gotten my magic? I'd be good as dead now. The thought was sobering.
"Well, in case you haven't noticed, I'm a girl."
She gestured at herself with one hand, and even though I hadn't been paying her much attention before on account of the whole moments from death thing, my eyes followed along the line of her body. She was wearing a pair of tight black yoga pants, along with a pink and black top that hugged her lithe, nubile form in a way that would be hard not to notice under normal circumstances. Even though she wasn't super chesty, the outfit did a good job of making me not care very much. I pushed the thought away before it could get its claws in me and cause problems of a decidedly different nature than men with machine guns could. While it might have been okay to admire the werewolf, something told me I didn't want her getting the wrong idea.
"I noticed," I said, looking away as my cheeks threatened to color. As far as I knew, I'd never really been one to go after the cool, tomboy-type girls, but just looking at her made me want to go for it in a way I couldn't describe. Unfortunately, this wasn't the time or place to think those kinds of thoughts. If I did, well, I might get us both killed, and I really didn't want that. Besides, I had a murder to commit and a sister to save.
"What's your point?" I asked, forcing myself to think unsexy thoughts about the Yankees and how they were a way worse team than the Mets. You know, to distract myself.
"I also happen to be in distress, and since you're all about taking down supernatural jerks, I thought you might lend me a hand."
I couldn't see her staring at me since I wasn't looking at her, but I could feel it, like a high-intensity laser beam.
"I'm actually sort of busy," I replied, spinning around in my chair and gesturing behind us. We were so far away, the only thing I could see of the carnage was smoke billowing high into the sky. That wasn't that strange, I guess, given her supersonic driving, but I still hadn't heard any sirens. What was the deal with police in this town? Did they even respond to calls?
She stopped at a red light and tapped anxiously on her steering wheel.
"I noticed," she said in an eerily similar imitation to my own voice. The only difference was she sounded a little dumber.
I gritted my teeth. Why did people always sound dumb when they mimicked my voice?
"But I think you'll help me anyway."
"Why is that? Do I seem like the kind of guy who helps murderous werewolves?" I asked, turning and looking at her.
She was staring at me like she was trying to decide whether or not she wanted to eat me. A shiver ran down my spine, and I unconsciously reached for the door. Maybe I could leap out and run away. Except Ricky was a werewolf, and not just any werewolf, but the alpha werewolf of this city. If I ran, she'd chase me. And worse still, she'd enjoy it.
"Because at this particular moment, our priorities happen to align."
The light turned green, and she swung her gaze back to the road.
"Those assassins work for a fellow named Pierce Ambrose, and he's one bad mamajemma.
He probably won't stop coming for you until you kill him. I'm not sure what you did to piss him off, but, and let me be clear on this, I don't care. I just want you to help me.
I can work with that, I said, leaning my head against the window and staring out at the cars outside. I'd thought about shrugging, but she wasn't looking at me, so I wasn't sure my gesture would have had the effect I was going for.
Let me be crystal clear, Mac. I want Pierce Ambrose dead, and if you're the type of guy who can kill Van, then maybe, just maybe, you can kill Pierce Ambrose too.
She reached up and finger-combed her red hair nervously, almost like she thought I'd refuse to help her, which was probably the smart play. I could walk away right now. Of course, if I did that, I'd be sentencing my sister to death since I had to kill Ambrose anyway, and having her help me would greatly increase my odds of success. But I was willing to bet Ricky didn't know that. She was just playing the percentages. If Pierce was after me, I'd kill him. Still, if I was her, I'd stay away and let me do it on my own. Her helping so directly was a dumb move. It meant she was doing this for more reasons than she'd let on. And that could be dangerous. I swallowed hard as another thought reared its ugly head. If Ricky was seriously asking me to help her kill the same guy I had been hired to kill, what had this Pierce Ambrose done to piss off so many people in the supernatural community, and why was he still alive? Not only did he have an actual demon wanting him dead, he had the alpha of a werewolf pack wanting him dusted too. Not many people could survive such a combination. I would have thought I'd have done a better job vetting my targets before accepting jobs. Some assassin I was. Only I probably had known Pierce was incredibly dangerous and had been overly confident. Stupid, overly cocky previous self. Look what you've gotten me into. Were you following me? I asked, before taking a deep breath and letting it out slowly, in a vain attempt to calm myself. It sort of worked. Maybe I needed to try counting to 10. Yes. Color filled her cheeks as she looked away. I asked Dwayne where you were going and persuaded him to give me the address he'd had you dropped off at. And before you go and get all high and mighty, she blushed harder, you should be happy I showed up when I did. Otherwise you'd be paced right about now.
Hey, I'm not judging, I replied, keeping all my comments to myself, because the last thing I wanted to do was anger the werewolf sitting next to me while I was trapped inside what amounted to a very tiny metal box moving at high speeds. But the timing makes me think you might be working with the people who tried to kill me.
She shot me a look that could have melted steel.
Mac, if I wanted you dead, you'd be dead, and I'd be using your entrails as a jump rope.
Her words conjured an image in my head I was very keen to dismiss.
But do me this solid, and I'll make sure no one ever comes after Sarah and her tyke ever again. Okay?
I took a deep breath and let it out through my teeth. I should take the deal, and not just because I needed to kill Pierce Ambrose to save my sister and her son, but because it would keep Sarah and her son safe too. I wasn't sure why Van and Visago had wanted the woman, but I was willing to bet that killing Van was more like a band-aid than a permanent fix. Sarah and John would no doubt be much safer with Ricky's pack watching over them. I still wasn't sure why I cared so much about them. Saving them last time had cost me a day, and right now, that extra day would have been invaluable. I know you aren't supposed to cry over spilled milk and all, but this definitely felt like I'd knocked the last of the baby's milk off the counter right before feeding time. Surely a few tears were in order.
Okay, I replied, not even feeling a little guilty, because I was totally going to wax Pierce Ambrose anyway.
Awesome, Ricky said, and the elation in her voice almost made me feel guilty. Almost.
So what's the plan?
I opened my mouth to shout something like, "You mean to tell me you don't have a plan?" But before I could, a gargoyle leapt off the building next to us and broadsided our Corvette.
The force of the impact sent our vehicle careening through the guardrail on our left in a squeal of tortured metal and a shriek of broken glass. Chapter 4. Have you ever been trapped inside a metal coffin while a 2-ton living statue tried to splatter your skull like a cassava melon? I hadn't before either, and let me tell you, it wasn't nearly as fun as it sounds. And yes, I realize it doesn't sound terribly fun. That's sort of my point. As we slid down the muddy embankment toward the lake below, the gargoyle's stone fist punched through the Corvette's bulletproof hardtop ridiculously close to my skull. Its stone fingers wrapped around the metal and peeled the top of the car back, like it was the lid on a sardine can. "God damn it!" Ricky cried, while grabbing hold of her seatbelt and tearing it free of the car's frame in one fluid motion. It was pretty amazing, because I'd managed to do little more than stare dumbly up at the creature while it eyed me like I was a particularly tasty sardine. Yep, not done with that metaphor quite yet. It's got at least 3 more uses left, I think. Ricky's left hand lashed out in a blur of motion I could barely follow with my naked eye. She smashed her fleshy fist into the giant rock monster. A sickening crack that was equal parts bone and stone filled my ears as the gargoyle actually lifted off the hood of the car and hit the muddy ground like a bag of wet cement. The dazed creature slid backward across the embankment, throwing up a cloud of dirt and debris as Ricky's hand flopped like a dying fish at the end of her wrist. Broken bones writhed and twisted back into place underneath her skin, while blood oozed from the torn flesh on her knuckles. A look of annoyance flashed across her face as she glanced from her ruined fist to me. She glowered at me like the gargoyle was my fault. Which maybe it was, I had no idea. But I hadn't told her to punch it in the face, either. "Why are you still wearing your seatbelt?" she asked, and the tone of her voice made me feel very stupid and useless. Before I could respond, she reached out with her non-shattered right hand and unfastened my seatbelt. "We need to get out of here before your buddy makes me punch him again. I don't know about you, but I'm not exactly fond of slugging it out with a goddamned statue." She held up her ruined fist for emphasis. "Yeah, you should try wearing gloves or something. That's what boxers do, you know, because they punch so hard they'd break their hands without them," I said, snapping myself out of my shock and scrambling up onto the seat so I could jump from the Corvette before we wound up in the lake. It wasn't exactly an awesome plan, I'll admit, but I was sort of under a lot of pressure at the moment. "When this is over, I'm going to punch you in the face," Ricky said, and the tone in her voice made me think she was totally serious. Deciding not to increase my chances of an ass-whooping at the hands of a pissed-off werewolf, I wisely kept my mouth shut. I tried to work up the courage to jump from the car as the gargoyle got to its feet and stared at us. One side of its face looked like it had been hit with a goddamned sledgehammer. And as I leapt from a moving vehicle as it slid toward a lake, I realized I was about to have a whole different problem. I was about to be out in the open with a huge rock monster hell-bent on killing us. At least, I think it was trying to kill us. For all I knew, smashing our car was gargoyle for "I love you." Either way, I wasn't exactly fond of finding out the gargoyle equivalent of a hug. "Whatever you say, Stumpy," I said before hitting the ground in a roll and coming to my feet covered in mud, grass, and slime. Ricky landed lithely next to me on her feet, without disturbing so much as a blade of grass. She shot the monster a glance before backhanding me across the face with her good hand. My head snapped backward as I crumpled to the ground in a fit of throbbing pain. She smirked at me. "Don't call me Stumpy, jackass," she said, turning away from me while I rubbed my jaw and prayed my teeth weren't actually loose. No, surely she hadn't hit me that hard. As I got to my feet, the Corvette slid off the edge of the embankment and fell into the lake with a splash that threw water in every direction. My gaze swung toward it to see the poor Corvette sinking into the lake with a level of finality I couldn't quite describe. I can't say why, but even though it was an inanimate object, I felt bad for the car. It didn't deserve to have walked the plank. Ricky barely spared it a glance as she sprinted toward the gargoyle, her neon-pink running shoes a blur on the muddy ground. When she was a few feet from the lumbering monster, she leapt high into the air like she was Trinity from the Matrix. Time seemed to slow down around us as her right foot lashed out and connected with the monster's dented face. The bones in her leg and foot shattered with a crack that made me wince in commiseration. The ragged edges of her tibia and fibula tore awkwardly through her skin in a spray of crimson as the creature's head snapped violently to the side. It wobbled like a drunk who had just had a bottle broken over its skull. Then, before I could blink, the monster's left hand snatched Ricky out of the air by the mop of short red hair on her head and flung her away like yesterday's garbage. She hit the lake some 20 feet away and skipped across the surface before sinking into its depths. "Damn," I muttered, hoping she wasn't dead, as I watched the concentric circles of water spread out from where she'd disappeared into the murky water. Ricky was a werewolf who'd just kicked a statue so hard she'd broken her leg. Surely she could survive being thrown into a lake. Still, there was no way of knowing if she was even still conscious. If she wasn't, there was a good chance she'd drown, even if she was a super-fast-healing werewolf. I needed to help her, and to do that, I needed to end this quickly. A howl that reminded me of someone sandblasting the side of a metal building filled my ears. I turned back around in time to see the gargoyle's fist aimed at my face. I ducked and tried to come in under its swing to judo throw it, but my feet slipped in the mud. I wound up toppling into the creature, and let me just say this, smacking your face into a gargoyle's torso is decidedly unfun. Instinctively, I grabbed hold of its arm as I went down. It was probably the only thing that saved me from knocking myself unconscious. Undeterred by my attack, the gargoyle curled its hand around the back of my trench coat and hoisted me into the air like I was a particularly naughty kitten. Its huge stone wings began to beat the air with steadily increasing speed. My heart shuddered in my chest. Was it about to fly off with me? There was no way that was going to end well. It was time for one of my brilliant ideas. "Hey, Rocky, want to see a trick?" I reached up and gripped its wrist with my right hand and grinned as it lifted me even higher, so I was staring into the beady black eyes sunk into its half-crushed skull.
"Do not make me break you into tiny pieces, mortal," the creature replied with its belt-sander voice. "I will not hurt you if you do not make me."
I stuck my tongue out at it in a tremendous show of maturity. "Sorbio!" Crimson light fissured up out of the gargoyle's skin and traveled up my arm like electricity. My teeth snapped together, and the world entered a high-octane spin. The creature's rocky flesh began to fracture, and the sound of cracking stone filled my ears before the handhold I had on its arm disintegrated into powder. I fell a couple feet to the ground as power swirled around me in crackling bursts of lightning. I curled the fingers on my right hand into a fist and let the gargoyle have it right in the kisser. The blow cleaved a hole the size of Denmark in its rocky skull. It stumbled backward awkwardly and fixed me with its one remaining eye. The look in that eye was not pleasant. I think it was rethinking that whole not going to hurt me bit. Well, I was fine with that.
"Looks like today is the day, Alice," I said as it lunged at me. I stepped past its swinging claws and gave it a solid uppercut to the breadbasket with my flaming fist of doom. "To the moon!"
My fist obliterated the monster's torso. What remained of the gargoyle was thrown back across the muddy earth. It struck the ground just as a monster hewn less from dreamscapes and more from nightmares burst from the lake. It landed on top of the downed gargoyle with enough force to drive the monster deep into the mud. It raised one clawed hand over its head so its dark claws glinted in the sunlight before raking through the creature's throat, severing the gargoyle's head from its neck. Then, very slowly, it looked at me and grinned, showing a remarkable amount of jagged yellow, braces-clad teeth.
"Seriously?"
It said in a voice vaguely reminiscent of Ricky's own, only, you know, more wolfish. I leave you alone for 3 seconds, and you basically kill the monster without me?
Yeah, well, I said, shrugging as the light surrounding me faded and my tattoos stopped glowing like I was embossed with neon lights.
You had your shot. 2, actually.
I shrugged again, because I knew it would annoy her.
But you know what they say. 3rd time's the charm.
Clearly you've never seen me actually try to hurt something.
She replied, already back in her normal girl form, which was good, because talking to a werewolf wearing black yoga pants and a pink sports bra was a little weird. I still wasn't quite sure why or how her clothes seemed to transform along with her, but I didn't really want to ask about it, because I was pretty sure the answer was either needlessly complicated or simply magic. Worse still, even though I'd been staring at her when she'd changed back into human form, I couldn't quite pinpoint the where and when of it all. One moment she had been a half-wolf, half-human monster, and the next, she was plain old Ricky, complete with braces and a charming disposition. It was quite unlike anything I'd ever seen before, and something about it gave me the willies.
I'm sure you'll get the opportunity to prove how useful you can be, I replied, offering her my hand.
She looked at it like I was offering her a bag of shit, so I took my hand back.
But we need to get out of here before someone comes down here to investigate why a huge moving statue threw us through a guardrail.
I wouldn't worry too much about that. Normal people tend to dismiss the supernatural. They'll just think there was a freak accident with a falling statue or something. They won't have seen me change, or the actual gargoyle.
She shrugged.
That sounds awfully convenient, I replied, sighing.
Was that why it seemed like people were inclined to ignore all the supernatural events that had happened around me? It seemed likely, but then again, I hadn't explicitly done much more than throw the occasional fireball. Maybe people thought I was just a crazy guy with a Molotov cocktail. That made a certain amount of sense. Otherwise, if Pierce was anything like Ricky, I'd have realized he was supernatural. At least, I'd like to think I would have.
Once we get out of here, I expect you to explain it to me a little better.
Great. So you'll help me get Pierce?
She asked, moving past me and heading toward the street several yards away. Evidently, she wasn't super concerned with the loss of her Corvette. I was, though, and not just because I had no idea how we were going to get from point A to point B now. No doubt Pierce's thugs were on their way to get us right now.
Yeah, I'll help as long as you tell me why you are so keen on getting Pierce Ambrose, I said,
and she stopped mid-step. She turned and looked at me, and there was so much sadness filling her eyes I could scarcely stand to look at it. I turned away, suddenly finding my muddy shoes incredibly interesting. What can I say? I'm a wuss, and seeing other people sad makes me feel bad.
He has my brother.
Ricky didn't have to say anything else, because those words hit me so hard I could barely stand. I immediately felt for her in a way I couldn't describe. I also knew one thing. Even if I hadn't been going after Pierce, I would have helped her get her brother back.
Where is Pierce keeping your brother? I asked, my voice low and calm.
Ricky stared at me for a long time before wiping the tears from her eyes.
You're really going to help me, Mac? You don't have to, really. I can find a way, even though I can't involve my pack in this.
Her hands tightened into fists.
I am Alpha. I can do this without them.
The look on her face